This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Let's pretend that in the hour ahead, we can make your New Year's wish come true. Well, if that wish has anything to do with the upcoming gathering of Virginia's General Assembly, state lawmakers begin their 2013 session next month. If that session were to accomplish one thing that would most please you, what would that be? Does it have something to do with schools, roads, healthcare, guns, social issues, taxes, or something completely different? Okay, now that you've got your wish pictured firmly in your mind, please mark down this phone number, 888-967-2825, 888-WMRA-TALK. Four state legislators have agreed to share their vision this hour, but they've also agreed to listen to yours, too. So listen we will, right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. The 2013 Virginia General Assembly session that gets underway in just a few weeks is our focus today. During the course of the upcoming hour, we're planning on talking with at least two Republicans and two Democrats who will be representing our part of the state in that session. And if you'd like any of them to hear your thoughts, express any ideas about what you'd like to see our state lawmakers accomplishing, please do call us at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Now, we've had a bit of last-minute change in our schedule on the part of some of our guests. Republican State Senator Emmett Hanger was originally going to be here in the Insight studio, but was called out of town. However, I believe we will still be hearing from Senator Hanger by phone shortly. Also later in the program, we plan to connect with Republican House of Delegates member Dickie Bell. Right now, however, I'm pretty sure we do have Democratic House of Delegates member David Toscano standing by the studio in Charlottesville. Delegate Toscano, thank you for making time for us.
Great to be on again, Tom. Thanks.
Also, Democratic State Senator Cree Deeds speaking to us from his home region in Bath County. Senator Deeds, welcome.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'd like to start out with the vision thing, if I could, gentlemen. I'm wondering if each of you could give us your vision of what the ideal result would be from this upcoming session of the Virginia General Assembly. And Delegate David Toscano, who also, by the way, is minority leader in the House. David, let's start with you.
Well, Tom, you know, we have been working on the transportation challenges over the for as long as I can remember, and we don't really seem to get to the end of where we need to be. And I think this is one of the biggest challenges that we've been facing. And unless we solve that challenge, we're going to put ourselves in a less competitive position vis-a-vis other states and other nations. We're going to need to raise some revenue in order to do it, and we need to have the political courage to stand up and do that.
Cree Deeds?
Yeah, you know, I can agree with David wholeheartedly. I don't think there's anything we can do which would have more immediate impact on our economy and on the Commonwealth than by addressing our transportation needs. We've got real problems in every part of the state. You know, we're not funding the formulas that were set in place 25 years ago. Local governments have seen, localities have seen their public, their secondary funds slip to 5 or 6% of what they were 10 years ago. We've got a crisis in transportation. More than 40% of our bridges and tunnels statewide are structurally deficient. We've got a real crisis, and we have a seeming meeting of the minds. I mean, Democrats acknowledge it, Republicans acknowledge it, the Senate knows it, the House knows it, and the governor knows it. We just have to be able to put aside the politics for a little bit and not worry about who gets credit for it and just come up with a solution. And I think, you know, there's a Republican state senator from Powhatan, John Watkins, who's laid ideas out on the table. Everybody knows we need to address this, and we're just wasting time. Why put off for tomorrow what we can do today? This is something we can do today. We can address transportation. We can come up with a long-term solution, and that would be nirvana for me.
Is the reason that it keeps getting put off is because there is such overwhelming resistance to increasing taxes?
Well, you're going to have to raise money, and I think there's no question that you're going to have to raise money if you're going to address transportation in a meaningful way. And nobody wants to acknowledge that or do that, though everybody really acknowledges it. some one idea that advanced in the House of Delegates last year and by the governor is to take money essentially from schools and law enforcement and public health and put it into transportation. That's unacceptable to me. That'll always be unacceptable to me, but we have to compromise. I'm willing to compromise and willing to do whatever is necessary. I remain convinced that the people that use the system of transportation, the motoring public, ought to bear the brunt of the burden of paying for transportation improvements.
David, as minority leader in the House, I guess you're probably well aware of the mythology, at least, that says that senators and delegates don't generally talk to each other and each house has some animosity toward each other. I don't know how much truth there still is to that, but I'm curious, have you and Cree talked at all about what you see as solutions for raising revenues for transportation? Have you talked with any senators about this?
Well, we talk all the time and some of my best friends are senators, you know, some of them came out of the House. And so, you know, we do talk all the time. And I think Cree is absolutely right. Everybody realizes that there's a problem. Most everybody realizes that in order to solve this problem, you're going to have to raise revenue. There's a difference of opinion on how to move forward. You know, Senator Deeds referenced Senator Watkins, who put forward some ideas about transportation that involve raising taxes. Last year, Delegate Putney, the head of the House Appropriations Committee, advanced an idea that we'd raise the sales tax and divide it a portion for the money going to transportation. Former Governor Bill Lyles has supported some variation of that, where you would take half of the money that would be increased from raising the sales tax and put it into transportation, and the other half into education. So we'd be investing in two critical pieces of our infrastructure that we need to do in order to keep ourselves competitive. So there are a number of ideas out there, but the governor really needs to step up and exercise the leadership that he's been given by being elected and try to control and convince people that a package should be put in place and should raise substantial dollars so we can maintain our bridges and roads and so we can build new ones to maintain our competitiveness.
How much new revenue do you two gentlemen want to see raised? And for example, how much would you think that the gas tax might need to be increased?
Senator Watkins' plan says he says he would generate about $773 million a year, and I think that's probably on the low end of what we need, but I think that's probably that we could probably get by with an increase like that. Here's the problem. In 2017, we're not going to be able to match the federal construction dollars that we receive the dollars we receive from the federal government for construction. To get those dollars in the first place, we have to match them. And because we're spending more of our construction dollars every year, about $400 million so far on construction dollars we're spending maintaining the roads, because state law, and this makes sense, state law says you have to maintain before you build. We're not going to be able to match the federal construction dollars by 2017. That's our own fiscal cliff in many respects. We're fast approaching it, and we're running out of time to act. It's time for gubernatorial leadership on this issue, in my view.
We're talking about what's coming up in the Virginia General Assembly, which opens its 2013 session on Wednesday, January 9th. Right now, we've got two Democrats with us who are going to be part of that session. Cree Deeds, who's a member of the Virginia Senate representing the 25th District. His home area is Bath County, but his district stretches through much of the valley all the way up into Charlottesville and Albemarle County. Also with us, the Democratic Minority Leader in the House of Delegates, 57th District House of Delegates member David Toscano from Charlottesville. If you want to talk to either of these gentlemen, we have a phone line open at 888-WMRA-TALK, 888-967-2825. As I mentioned at the outset, although we've had some schedule changes on the part of our other guests, we do have some Republicans who will be joining us soon as well. Cree, with the proposal that you were talking about, is there a specific in there about raising the gas tax? And if there's not, do you have a sense of how much the gas tax needs to be raised?
Well, I think the gas tax is going to be part of the equation. It's got to be part of any compromise. An increase in the gas tax most likely will occur, and it does under Senator Watkins' bill. But I don't.
Do you know how much?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I can't tell you right now because the specifics of that bill, the last I heard, were still in development.
And, okay.
But here's what I think that none of us really need to get pinned down too much on any specific item of what might be a part of a compromise. We've got to be open to just about anything we can do to solve this problem, because if we don't, by 2017, we're going to have our own fiscal cliff. And what that's going to mean, Tom, is that the top dollars that we pay at the gas pump, the federal tax dollars we pay, whenever we pump a gallon of gasoline that flow back into Virginia, are going to go to other states. That's what the fiscal cliff means. That federal money that we get, we're still going to be paying it at the gas pump, but we're going to be paying to improve roads in Wyoming and West Virginia and Mississippi and New Mexico, and not in the Shenandoah Valley, and that's just unacceptable.
Delegate David Toscano, earlier this year, the Virginia Pilot newspaper over on the eastern side of the state did a series of stories about gas prices and gas taxes in other states that border Virginia, focusing mostly on North Carolina, noting that Virginia's gas tax, last raised in 1986 for the past quarter century, has stayed at 17.5 cents, and that North Carolina's gas tax is currently about 17 cents higher than Virginia's. But according to this series of newspaper stories, what they found was the average price at the pump in North Carolina is only about 2 cents higher than the average price of Virginia gas, where our gas tax is so much lower. Do you have a sense of why that might be?
Boy, I wish I knew why it might be. I've known this statistic for a long time, and a lot of us have been very concerned. And, of course, it depends on how you fix the gas tax and what dealers do when they pass along that tax to the consumer. If you take a look at gasoline prices, even a couple of weeks ago, they were about $3.20 a gallon, and now they're hovering about $3, in some cases below that. So that's like a 20-cent difference just in the last 2 weeks to a month. Just to give you some context, if you were to raise the gas tax 10 cents, which would have you paying gas, even if all of it was passed along, at less than what you were paying 2 weeks ago, that raise in the gas tax would bring in $500 million. That's a lot of money. And, of course, you always have to be sensitive to the tax increases because, real people like you and I are paying it, and some folks have a really hard time of it. It's not – the economy is not booming right now, and – people always have a hard time of it, but there also is no free lunch. And if we want to make sure that our roads are maintained, our bridges are safe, and that we build new roads where we need to build them, we have to raise the revenue to do it. And the gasoline tax increase is one way to do that. It's not the only way, but it is one way.
We're going to go next to Harrisonburg with Jane, where, by the way, David Toscano, there in Charlottesville, I've been noticing that gas prices in Charlottesville have been running about 10 to 15 cents a gallon lower than Harrisonburg, and I'm not sure why that is. But, Jane, I suspect you're not calling about gas taxes. You're calling about something else?
I am. I'm calling because I'd like to know where all of the money for education has gone that the lottery promised that they would give to the state when we gave them permission to be here and run their lotteries. It seems to me they have a phenomenal amount of profit that could be put into the educational system that would take a huge burden off the state. And one more small thing, in the beginning of this country, Rockefeller and Carnegie and those folks that were private sector went a long way towards building infrastructure. There are corporations and really, really wealthy people. Could they not get together, perhaps, and make some kind of corporation that would put people back to work with doing infrastructure repair and building, that they then could maybe get a tax break for forming that kind of a corporation and putting the people back to work?
Jane, you've raised two fascinating points. Unfortunately, we've got about 10 seconds before we're going to hit the break. So I'm going to ask you to stand by and give our two guests, State Senator Cree Deeds and Delegate David Toscano, a full minute to consider your questions, and then we'll hear their response when we continue on Virginia Insight. This is Virginia Insight. We're taking a look at what might be coming as of January 9th when the Virginia General Assembly opens its 2013 session. Two key lawmakers who are going to be part of that are here with us. David Toscano, who's the Democratic Minority Leader in the House of Delegates, and Cree Deeds, one-time Democratic candidate for governor, but still a state senator based out of Bath County. And we have Jane's question. Cree Deeds, let's go to you first for her first part, a question about the lottery.
And I'll tell you, that Jane's got an excellent question, comes up all the time. It's got a simple answer. In the year 2000, the people, including, I presume, Jane and certainly me and David and you, Tom, passed a constitutional amendment that required that all lottery profits go to education. And since 2000, since probably 95 before that, because we passed a statute requiring that in 95 or 96, the lottery money goes to the general fund and goes to education, a lot of it. Now, you can find that information by going to the lottery's webpage, and I'm kind of a lazy guy that just Googles it, so I don't know what the webpage address is. But Google Virginia Lottery, go to the webpage, and you get a breakdown of where every cent of that money goes. And you're right, it is tremendously profitable. It's one of the things that one of the growth engines in Virginia's revenue stream.
So it is your view that it is doing a significant service to education in Virginia?
Absolutely. It's not, you know, I would do it a different way, frankly. I would put it toward educational capital improvements, because I think the lottery fund is one of those things that over time can ebb and flow. I don't think it's as steady. I would prefer to have just straight general fund dollars, general fund tax dollars funding K-12 education, accounts, general activities. I'd rather have this go into the capital projects available, somewhat like the lottery fund, to all Virginia localities. But that's not what the majority has chosen. It happened in constitutional amendment and by general law, at least since 2000. It's flowed directly to education through the general fund.
David Toscano, if I understood Part B of Jane's question, it had something to do with finding the new Rockefellers and Carnegies.
Well, you know, I think that's a great question. You know, the good news is there are a lot of very philanthropic folks in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and they've really had to step up to help fund things that otherwise would be funded by local and state government. You take a look at a number of museums that have come to rely on private dollars. Take our university. Take the University of Virginia. You know, it used to be the university was totally state-supported. Some people say it's gone from state-supported to state-sponsored to state-located, you know, where a very small percentage of the operating money actually comes from the state, and a lot of it comes from private dollars that are flowing in from donors. Whether people could build roads with those dollars, that's another challenging question. It used to be way, way, way back when roads were built with private money. And there were a lot of tolls attached to them, but that changed pretty substantially in the early part of the last century, and I don't think we're going back. But it's also always good to have private donors trying to help fund the things that government either can't support or shouldn't support.
Jane, thank you so much for your call.
And I think, kind of an extension of that, Jane, is that, you know, with public-private partnerships, we pretty much got the private sector doing that now. The result is the toll roads in Northern Virginia around Richmond, and certainly public-private partnerships. The governor's proposed to do highway maintenance on Interstate 95, and eventually I think it'll probably come to all interstates.
Jane, thanks again. Gentlemen, I want to read to you just the headlines that I've collected over the past, I think, 2 days, from a number of newspapers across the state, and you can probably guess what the topic is, but they've been appearing with amazing frequency, all related to the same topic. The first one here says, McDonnell arming principals might help. Cuccinelli open to armed teachers. A Connecticut shooting spur flurry of Virginia gun bills. Bowling breaks with McDonnell on guns. In Virginia, expect talk, not changes on gun laws. And Virginia bill would order schools to arm teachers. This last one, a headline from Wednesday's Washington Post. I think it was their online edition, talking about Republican Robert Marshall's bill that would require some school district officials to be carrying guns. Is gun control, gun issues, concerns about gun rights going to be an overwhelming theme in the upcoming session of the General Assembly, Senator Deeds?
It's going to be an issue, no question about it. It always is. I think the disaster, really, that occurred in Connecticut brings it more to light. Now, I would prefer that the laws of the gun laws be done at the federal level, because I would prefer to have uniform regulations rather than mishmash. And in general, I'm a strong supporter of the Second Amendment, but I don't know why we need assault weapons. And I don't, you know, these. I think that this activity in Connecticut is going to spurn a whole lot of reaction at the Virginia legislature and in every legislature around the country. You know, I think that people understand that there's no price that's too high for us to pay to protect our children. I think it's nuts to think that arming principals or teachers who ought to be concerned about educating our children, it's nuts to think that's going to work, because, you know, there's just lots of reasons why that won't work. From my perspective, we're going to take up a number of bills. I don't know how far they'll go, and I don't know how effective they'll be, but I'm confident that there will be a number of issues raised in this session of the General Assembly. People are concerned about this.
Senator Cree Deeds from Bath County, Democrat, is going to be with us for just a couple of more minutes. If you want to talk to him, call us, please, at 888-WMRA. Talk also with us from Charlottesville, the delegate representing the 57th District, which includes Charlottesville and parts of Albemarle County. But he is also the Democratic minority leader in the House of Delegates, David Toscano. David's going to be with us throughout the rest of the hour. We've been trying to reach Republican State Senator Emmett Hanger, who has been a proponent of gun rights in the past. There's been a little snafu in his schedule. We haven't gotten to him yet. So, Cree, you can hold on for a few more minutes.
Sure.
We're going now to Richmond. This is a call from Meg. And Meg, do I understand that you are affiliated with the Virginia Education Association?
Yes, sir. I'm currently serving as president.
And you had a comment that you wanted our legislators to hear.
I'm really concerned about all of this discussion, you know, that we're having about guns, because I'm really concerned that it's taking away from the primary focus of what we need to talk about with public education, and that is ensuring that every child across the state of Virginia has a quality education. I think it's important, I guess, to get your feedback on the fact that in the last, since 2009, so in the last 3 years or so, Virginia per pupil funding has been cut from $5,274 down to $4,233, and that's about a 20% cut. What do you think we need to be doing to invest in our children's futures?
Cree Deeds, since you're going to be leaving us in about a minute, can you respond to that?
Meg's got a very good point. You know, cutting funding for education is like eating your seed corn. And anybody who was raised on a farm knows that the last thing you do before you die is you eat your seed corn. You know, cutting education ensures it demonstrates a lack of confidence in the future. You know, from my perspective, there our children have to be our first priority, and that means we've got to reinvest in education, in K through 12 and in higher education, because that's the way we build the workforce to ensure that Virginia remains the best place to live, the best place to work, the best place to raise kids. We've got to give our kids a future, and it begins with public education.
Democratic member of the Virginia Senate representing the 25th Senate District, which includes the cities of Buena Vista, Charlottesville, Covington, and Lexington, as well as the counties of Allegheny, Bath, Highland, Nelson, and Rockbridge, plus portion of Albemarle. Cree Deeds, thank you so much for your time, sir.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for the question, Meg.
David Toscano, did you have a response to what Meg's concerns are about teachers and education?
Well, I think it's a question of priorities. And again, you know, we can't, you know, we can't ignore what happened in Connecticut. I mean, it's just been presented to us, and we're going to have to deal with it in some fashion. That being said, the number one priority for me is public education, education K through 12 and higher education. Of course, the University of Virginia is in my backyard, so I'm very concerned about how we've been underinvesting in higher education as well. But, Yes, the numbers show pretty clearly. The state has not been stepping up to the plate in terms of its priorities for education. The result has been sort of disproportionate depending on where you live. In Charlottesville and Albemarle, that are relatively wealthy communities, the local jurisdictions have stepped up. They have the local taxpayers have decided they're going to make up the difference. And even though there have been some cuts in those divisions, they haven't been as acute as in other parts of the Commonwealth that are poorer and don't have the strength of the local tax base to make up the difference. So what you're doing, I think, by underfunding education is you're creating these disparities around the Commonwealth. That's not really what we've all ever wanted to do. That's not something that's good for the Commonwealth as a whole. And we have to rededicate ourselves to that priority if we're really going to maintain ourselves as one of the best states to raise a family in the country.
Meg, as a teacher who is now serving as head of the Virginia Education Association, have you been hearing much from your colleagues, your fellow teachers, about concerns about safety in the classroom, or is it more what are we going to do to make sure that we have adequate funding?
I think mostly what I'm hearing about even right now is concerns with adequate funding. None of my colleagues have been talking to me or, you know, contacting me about fearing for their safety. I think our schools are primarily a very safe place for children and for our staff, and it's a tragedy and so sad what happened in Connecticut, but I don't think that's something that preys on everybody's mind every day. It's more about how can, for us as teachers, how can we meet the needs of our students as our class sizes are growing and as the demands for individualization with each child is increasing.
Meg, thank you so very much for taking the time to call us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We now have on the phone line with us Republican from Augusta County, member of the Virginia Senate representing the 24th District, which actually stretches through much of the valley and then all the way up into Culpeper, Senator Emmett Hanger. Senator Hanger,
yeah,
thanks for making
here.
Time for us. So, Emmett, just before you got on the line, we've been talking about guns and about education, not necessarily the connection between the two, but, of course, lately people are thinking about the connection.
Right.
Do you want to pick either one of those topics or both and give us a little bit about your view?
Well, of course, the obvious reason we're talking about it is because of the terrible tragedy that happened last week. And, you know, I'm in the corner that would suggest that, you know, particular situations that happen generally don't make good legislation if you just react to that quickly. And I think that's what we're seeing right now is that, you know, there are a lot of people talking about solutions in both directions legislatively when probably legislation isn't what's needed right now. And so certainly, I've been historically, I'm a strong proponent of Second Amendment rights. I also recognize inherent in that is a responsibility for individuals to behave in an appropriate manner. So I think we're all appalled at something like that could happen, and we'll all be looking for answers. But I at the same time, I don't think there should be a heightened concern for the safety of our children. We do need to certainly pay attention to the society in which we live and recognize that if we continue to on the trajectory we're on, this is just certainly just my opinion, that our freedoms will suffer. You can't live in a free society unless there is appropriate behavior. The more inappropriate behavior there's at, the more costly it is to us. And the more difficult it is to monitor and deal with in a free society. So, you know, education is something we need to focus on as far as appropriate funding. I heard a little bit of that conversation. And the big concern that I have there, of course, is that as we've weathered the recession, we have kind of tilted the balance back to local governments. So whether the local governments, the localities are rich or poor, they've had to step up in many instances. Increase local fees and real estate taxes, and in my opinion, that is not the direction to go. That we really need to readdress that
Senator Hanger, we only have you on the line for a couple more minutes. As you may know, David Toscano, the House Minority Leader, is also with us. I wanted to see if David had a question for you, and then if you had a question for him. David, go ahead.
Well, Senator Hanger, it's nice to talk to you today. And we've been talking about transportation, and I guess I'd be curious about your take on Senator Watkins' proposal and whether you think it has much of a chance of getting some traction in the Senate in some form.
This was the proposal that was mentioned earlier that would raise some taxes and raise some revenues for transportation.
Right. Well, there actually, I think, is going to be a significant conversation and actually some work that's beginning right now to try to come to some agreement, if you will, on basic a basic proposal for transportation. Senator Watkins' proposal is one of many that will come around. Historically, we've had difficulties in getting anything passed that would raise additional revenues. And Senator Watkins' proposal actually is a fairly aggressive proposal, which I've been looking. I would be pleased if we could get a nickel or just a penny or two. Every penny on the gas tax raises $50 million. His proposal, one of the components of it, would raise the gas tax about 15 cents. So politically, I don't think anything like that will fly, but I commend him, and in fact, we're having an ongoing conversation now about what could pass, and there's some components that of his proposal, perhaps, that can address parts of it.
Senator, it's been Republicans in the past in Richmond who've been most opposed to raising the gas tax, although you, at times, have been willing to consider that possibility. Do you have a sense of what's within your range right now of whether it's a penny or a nickel or a dime, how much of an increase in the gas tax you'd be willing to vote for?
Well, it's going to take more than just the gas tax. The gas tax, you don't want to, after you all these years without increasing it, put a huge increase out there.
I understand that, sir, but I'm wondering if you have a sense of whether there is a, when it comes to the gas tax, any number that you'd be willing to vote for?
Well, there are numbers that I would vote for, but quite frankly, I'm involved with conversations with people now who in the past have been not been willing to vote for a penny. And so I'm my conversation with them is where can we find some common ground? Do we need to shift? The big concern that I have, I will support appropriate user fees, tolls in appropriate places, and by that I mean high traffic areas, bridges, tunnels, areas where it makes sense to put tolls. But the gas tax, I think, needs to be addressed because of the buying power that has been lost and the increased fuel efficiency in vehicles. But you can't get it all there. We're going to have to look perhaps in some other areas, but.
Senator Hanger, I'm so sorry. We are going to lose you in less than a minute. So before you go, do you have a question that you'd like to ask David Toscano, and we'll have him respond after the break?
I wasn't prepared to ask my colleague questions there. I would just, I think he normally is fairly thoughtful on issues of this type, and Reckick as one of the leading voices. From the minority party in the House, I think, is probably frustrated at times with the lack of ability on transportation to raise additional resources. I would like to share, though, in the brief time that I have, that I'm hoping to address the broad question of tax reform. I've worked on this before. I'm looking to hopefully create a commission to look at local and state government responsibilities in providing services, and at the same time look at the broad tax structure that's available.
Thank you so much, Senator Hanger. It's good to be speaking with you, sir. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. With us via a studio hookup in Charlottesville from his home area is 57th District Delegate, a Democrat, David Toscano, also the minority leader in the House of Delegates. And now we're joined by a member of the majority who I understand is traveling eastward in Virginia right now, Dickie Bell. He's the House of Delegates member representing the 20th District, and his home area is Stanton. But you're pretty far away from home right now, I understand, Mr. Bell.
Yes, I am, Tom.
We're hoping that the telephone signal is going to hold up okay. Just before he left us, State Senator Emmett Hanger, I think you were on hold, you might have heard him, was talking about his desire for tax reform. And that's been an issue that you've had some interest in, too, isn't it, Dickie?
Yeah, yes. Yeah, I have a great deal of interest in it. I think that's more than anything else, I think that's what's needed. Before we talk about tax increases and new taxes, I think we need to take a hard look at reforming the tax system in the Commonwealth. I think it's outdated. I think there are lots of things we could do to improve the revenue picture just through some tax reform.
What is there anything in particular?
What does that look like? I'm curious what that looks like.
Well, I start with corporate income tax. You know, I'm one of those people who favors doing away with it. I think we make that a starting point, and then we look at other taxes that we can eliminate before we start just automatically looking to raise taxes.
Do you have a follow-up, David?
Well, you know, I'm all for tax reform, but, you know, if we're talking about substantial shortfalls in revenue to pay for transportation, if we're talking about needing to continue to invest in our educational system, I don't know how you do it just by cutting taxes. I think that if you're going to talk about reform, that means that you change the rates some places, but you raise the rates in other places, or you broaden the tax base by bringing more people in to be taxed or more entities in to be taxed. So Dickie, I'd love to know, I mean, how do you solve the revenue issue by just cutting taxes, unless you're going to take the position you cut taxes and the economy grows so fast you could bring more revenue in. Maybe that's the position you take, but I'm curious, so tell me.
Well, that's certainly a hopeful position that we'd like to have, that we're always going to be increasing revenue from in other ways besides raising taxes. But I think serious tax reform also means we have to take a look at spending. I still think that we spend too much money in a lot of areas. I think entitlement spending needs to be examined or reexamined. And I think the way we spend our money, more so than the amounts we spend, need to go under the microscope.
I was just waiting to see if you two were going to keep talking to each other.
Well, yeah, I guess. So let me ask you about transportation. Even the governor admits that we have a $500 million maintenance shortfall in transportation. Are we going to cut more?
Well, I don't know that there's anything to cut in transportation. Transportation is not a problem that was born of this administration or in the last couple of years. That everybody for the last 30 years has to take some of the responsibility for our transportation problem. And it is a problem. We have a big problem with transportation. And I don't think any of those solutions that have been offered so far are a silver bullet to cure them. I think it'll take some kind of a blended formula in order to even get us to where we can maintain the money it takes to maintain roads, let alone with new construction.
Republican Dickie Bell, Democrat David Toscano, one area where the two of you have shown significant agreement in the past is on concerns about mental health services and mental health funding in Virginia. And this is a headline that appeared in the Stanton News Leader, your home area, Dickie, about a week and a half ago. It said mental health services vulnerable to possible almost $9 million reductions in state funding. Of course, that discussion was taking place before the tragedy in Connecticut and all the discussions nationally now, as well as in Virginia, about the need for improved mental health services. Can both of you give me your sense about whether more money needs to be spent on mental health in Virginia or less, or whether you have the money that you want to be spending? And Delegate Bell, let's go to you first.
Well, I seriously think we need to put more money into children's mental health, into early crisis intervention. I think that's an area where we can certainly improve it's going to take some more funding in order to improve there. So I think the budget that the governor announced this week is not really as, I guess, not really as damaging to mental health funding as some people might think. Mental health funding comes largely under the Comprehensive Services Act. A lot of the services that mental health services include, and those, that's a some sufficient budget, if you will, one that generally works on need. And so to see that that money was cut from there doesn't necessarily mean that there won't be money available for needed services. So I'm not so worried about cuts there, but I just don't think that we have funded mental health services to the degree we need to. You know, ever since we accepted the idea of deinstitutionalization some 40 years ago, in my opinion, we failed to fund mental health services the way we should have.
David Toscano?
Well, this certainly is one area where I think we agree, especially in the area of youth prevention and youth mental health services. You know, in the aftermath of the Virginia Tech tragedy, we were able to cobble together a package that brought several hundred million dollars more into the system. But then, of course, the recession hit, and everyone had to take some cuts, and mental health was one of those areas that received the cuts. And I think that's what we're seeing across the board. There are a lot of things that we all like to support, we think are important to support, and the only way you support them is with revenue. And that's why we have to have a tax system that's broad-based and raises the revenue sufficient to fund the services to which the citizens have become accustomed and think are important. You know, one of the things in this tax reform area I think that would be interesting to explore in a little more detail, and I think Dickie and I have talked a little bit about this in the past, is we need to really take a close look at the preferences we give in our tax code to certain entities, large corporations that may or may not be using the money in the way for which it was intended. You know, a lot of these tax preferences are designed to create, supposedly to create jobs, and yet we sometimes lose track of whether they really are doing that. The coal tax credit is a perfect example of that. There's a piece I wrote last week in the Richmond Times-Dispatch that takes the legislature, challenges the legislature to look at that credit, because it's not creating jobs, but it is taking $50 million out of the public treasury and giving it to a very small number of companies. And that $50 million could be used for mental health services for the young people in our Commonwealth.
Delegate Toscano, I'd love to have a further discussion on that. Unfortunately, we've got several people who've been waiting on the line for quite a while to talk to you, and I need to let anybody who's just joined us know that we have with us 57th District House of Delegates member, Democrat from Charlottesville, David Toscano, speaking to us from a studio in Charlottesville, and on the road, on his way, I think, to the Outer Banks, Republican from Stanton, Dickie Bell, who represents the 20th House of Delegates District. And we're going next to Crozet. Matthew, your question for Mr. Bell and or Mr. Toscano, please.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And really, either of them could answer their question. My general concern is the lack of representation in the state of Virginia, meaning that we have gerrymandered districts that are absolutely terrible. As a resident of Crozet, you know, I think Senator Hanger is my senator. I mean, it's ridiculous. The 5th District, 5th Congressional District, goes from the North Carolina border basically to Maryland. It's unacceptable. And to think that they can say that there are representatives is factually incorrect, because they just happen to have us in their district. And it's very frustrating for people like myself and the other residents of Crozet. So I would like to see some action put forth to help resolve that problem that we have.
Delegate Bell, you're in the majority in the Republican Party. Do you see anything changing about how redistricting is done in the future?
You know, I don't see it in the short term, but I would certainly support it. I think the this whole redistricting process that we just went through a year ago is not something that I'm very fond of. And I'm not trying to make light of it, but I've used the comparison to that's like political sausage making, You don't really want to see everything that goes into it. You just hope you can swallow what comes out. And it's not very representative. We need to take a more objective approach. The people being represented need to have a voice in redistricting, and they don't. And so, I would welcome an opportunity to make changes, but I have to say that I don't think a lot of the senior incumbents feel the same way.
Matthew, thank you so much for your call. We're going to go next to Roanoke. Jerry, you're on the line with us with Republican Delegate Dickie Bell and Democratic Delegate David Toscano.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I always listen to the show. My question is, the gentleman said that he will eliminate the corporate income tax on the corporation. Why don't he reverse that and eliminate the tax on labor and do consumption? Even across the country, the federal government should even come to light. It should make some kind of sense. With 15, 20 million people unemployed, there's still a heck of a lot of people out here that are involved in consumption across the country.
Jerry, let me just clarify, if I could. When you say the tax on labor, you mean get rid of the income tax?
Definitely. The slave tax, I call it.
Okay, well, let's let Delegate Bell respond to that. Delegate Bell, how do you feel about getting rid of the income tax? Some states don't have any income tax. And Jerry's idea about a consumption tax.
Well, I think the states that don't have a personal income tax simply transfer that tax to something else, and they collect it in another way. I think we just need to accept the fact that a certain level of taxation is necessary unless we're willing to give up services. We have to pay some level of taxation. I would like for it to be much more fair. I think a flat tax would be more fair, but the long-term prospects of that happening, I don't think are very good. But I do think David made a really good point, and I feel the same way. In all these tax credits that have been issued over the years, and there are a ton of them, and we haven't held people accountable to see if they were producing the results that they were designed to produce. And so I think we need to reexamine every one of those and make sure that they're doing what they were intended to do. And if not, then to reclaim them. A consumption tax, I think in theory at least, it's a great idea. If it ever got to a point where I had to cast a vote on it, I would probably support it. But I honestly don't hold out much hope for that happening.
Jerry, thanks so much for your call. David Toscano, we are going to run short on time here. We got a couple of minutes left. I'm wondering either if there's a topic we haven't raised yet that you'd like a chance to talk about, or if you have a question for Delegate Bell.
Well, I don't have a question for Dickie, although I wish him the best on his trip. It was interesting to comment on redistricting, because I voted against the redistricting plan that was put forward in the House and the Senate, because I thought it was being controlled by the majority to disadvantage the minority. And I think what you've got with redistricting now is you've got legislators choosing their constituents rather than constituents choosing their legislators. I support a nonpartisan redistricting commission. I'm going to have a bill in. I hope Dickie can sign on to it. That bill has never gone very far, but if you'd had a nonpartisan redistricting commission that looked at these districts independent of the politics of it all, independent of trying to shore up these seats for and to protect incumbents, I think the public would be better served and they'd be able to participate a lot better in the political process. And we'd probably have more moderation and greater ability of legislators to talk to each other to bring solutions to the table.
Dickie Bell, there's been a bill like that before the House several years in a row, and the Republicans have always voted it down. How do you feel about it?
Well, I can tell you this. After going through the redistricting process, and that was my first time, I feel a lot differently about all of it than I once did. And some of the things I've seen make me very uncomfortable. I think David nailed it. We are in a pattern here where we're trying to pick our constituents and secure ourselves for in 10-year blocks, and I think that's wrong. I think that if we want people to participate in government, then their voice has to be heard, and we have to make it possible for them to have a stronger voice, louder voice, in who represents them.
David, does that sound to you like you might have a Republican vote from Stanton this time around for a redistricting nonpartisan commission?
Oh, I hope so. And, you know, Dickie and I spent a lot of time both on this show and talking to each other face-to-face on a lot of these issues. So, you know, maybe there'll be some common ground. I hope so.
Gentlemen, thank you both so much. Our guests have been 57th District House of Delegates member, Democrat from Charlottesville, as well as House Minority Democratic Leader, David Toscano, plus 20th District Virginia House of Delegates member, Republican from Stanton, Dickie Bell, as well as earlier in the program, Republican from Augusta County, 24th District State Senator Emmett Hanger, and Democrat from Bath County, 25th District State Senator Cree Deeds. Thank you all so very much for making time for us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Merry Christmas.
Safe journey, Dickie Bell. You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on Programs, and then clicking on Insight Archives. If you go to that page, you'll find links to more information about all of our guests. Plus, if you go to the Virginia Insight Facebook page and click like, you'll have access to a whole bunch more information about these broadcasts there as well. Insight's executive producers, Matt Bingay, our associate producers, Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. We had extra help today from Sarah McConnell, Tony Field, Andrew Windham, and Elliot Majerzik at the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight, and have a happy holiday season.